Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Get up-to-the-minute news flashes, instant reaction and expert analysis from some of the biggest names in Westminster.
Order!
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're back, of course, on College Green in Westminster, where it is all happening. Today, we are going to have a theme running through the show from now until 1 o'clock. And it is, of course, the Day of the Living Dead. Theresa May has had the biggest defeat of any government in the history of politics in this country. She lost last night the vote by 230 votes. 118 of her own MPs don't even like what she's doing. For different reasons. Some don't like it because it's not hard enough. Some don't like it because it's not soft enough. She apparently has been humiliated beyond all measure. According to the front page of the Daily Mail today, she's fighting for her life. According to the front page of the Sun today, Brexit is all but extinct. According to the Daily Telegraph, which is my favourite, it is a complete humiliation. For heaven's sake, Theresa, what are you going to do next? According to Jeremy Corbyn, there's going to be a vote of no confidence in the government. He's not going to win that either. Does anybody in Westminster know how to win anything? That's my question. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is Talk Radio.
The fallout, the fury, the future.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
Now, it's hard to believe it's going to get any better than that, but I'm afraid it is going to get a lot better than that because it's going to get a lot more heated. There's a lot more police down here. I think they've been tipped off that there might be a few more demos going on today. Last night, it was an absolute cauldron of entertainment, of vision, of humour, of relief, of all manner of different emotions. It was an incredible scene here last night. Talk Radio, of course, broadcasting all the way through the night until 1 o'clock in the morning, and we'll be doing the same tonight and today as well. We've had a vote yesterday by Theresa May, which she lost even more heavily than anybody could have ever imagined. Today we've got Jeremy Corbyn supposedly putting up his first of many no-confidence votes, which he apparently is not going to win because the DUP have already said they're going to back Theresa May. In order to try and find our way through this zombie-like world of Westminster, we have invited John Rentel, the chief political commentator for the Independent newspaper, a man who has been talking to me for many years, but we've never actually met. So welcome, and thank you very much for joining the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. What an absolute shambles is all I can start off with.
What an absolute privilege to meet you in the flesh, Mike.
Well, thank you, John.
After all these years.
Thank you.
It is, it's a very controlled shambles. It looks like quite a British shambles.
It is quite a British shambles,
I mean,
yes.
I think it was quite a sort of continental shambles last night.
Yes.
Because there's much more sort of hooting and waving of flags and ringing.
The bell has disappeared.
Ringing of bells.
And that was the vote leave bell, apparently.
That's right.
And the drums came from the Remain side. I'm not sure what that means, but...
I didn't know
it was quite. It was quite cacophonous, wasn't it?
Yeah, but also made absolutely no sense whatsoever because you had two groups of people out here, both of them cheering Theresa May's defeat.
Well,
so you had the Remainers who want a second referendum, absolutely delighted that she's been defeated, and you've got the hard Brexit lot who want to leave without a deal.
Yes,
they were all cheering as well. Now, one group of those has got to be wrong.
Well, exactly. It was a bit like watching, seeing that famous picture that was on the front page of The Guardian of them all going through the lobby, coming from different directions. It was a bit like seeing one of those kind of scenes from a football match where everybody's been let out at the same time and nobody's very sure if it's all going to kick off. Because it is the most ludicrous thing. I mean, only Theresa May, it seems to me, could have managed to find the middle ground which is most distasteful to everyone.
Well, yeah, but it is the middle ground, Mike. I mean, that's the point of it.
Yeah.
And I think her deal is actually surprise. I mean, it might surprise you that I'm saying this, but I think it still is the most likely option to be able, in the end, to muster a majority in the House of Commons.
Well, listen, I said when it was first revealed that the deal was the one on the table, I said, well, at least it's a start. I mean, it's something on the road to what some people want, and it's something on the road to what some other people want. It's not perfect. However, according to the newspapers this morning, it's dead in the water. It's dust.
No, it's
it
not.
Has turned to not, absolutely nothing.
Not at all. Mm. I mean, what is surprising about Theresa May is, you know, I thought she would come to the dispatch box last night after the defeat and have some kind of clever plan for how she was going to move it forward. But she doesn't.
No.
She's got the same plan, which is to keep trying.
To carry on, yeah.
And the point is that, you know, that could work because, you know, I mean...
Well, relentless mediocrity is becoming a sort of watchword for British politics, isn't it? I mean, it really is what it is. It's relentless mediocrity. No vision particularly, just a kind of a dogged determination that there's the end point over there. We're just going to keep walking towards it, even if we get, you know, hacked down. It reminds me of that scene of the Black Knight in the Monty Python Holy Grail movie where they chop his arms off. And he's like, come on then, let's go, ready, legs go, I'm still here.
No, but the point about the Black Knight is that was making fun of him because he'd lost, whereas she hasn't.
Well, she keeps losing,
though. She hasn't yet. And the point is, I mean, this is her technique, is to keep going. You're absolutely right. Mm. Dogged determination.
Yeah.
Refusing to communicate, actually, what her plan is. Mm. She never. I mean, her cabinet ministers absolutely hated it last week before the vote because she wouldn't say what she was going to do after the vote.
Yes.
And turns out she wasn't going to do anything.
Well,
very
indeed.
Interesting.
And interesting yesterday as well, because we were down here yesterday, of course, talking to lots of different Tory MPs, some who were going to vote with her, others who weren't. The view was definitely that the noises coming out of Downing Street yesterday morning were much more positive than the final result ended up being. We were being told, you know, we think it's moving closer to 100, maybe even less. At one point, people were saying it could be as good as 75, in which case we'll be popping the champagne corks, you know. And then I was actually quite shocked see 230 massive number of people who seem to have wanted to give her some kind of a message or give her a bloody nose of one
when,
kind
when
or
you
other.
Saw Sir Graham Brady in the no lobby with those illegal photos that MPs were taking of MPs as they voted, that was the moment when you realized it was all slipping away from
yes
her.
No absolutely.
I mean we assumed during the day that loyalty would kick in and a lot of Tory MPs who'd said they were going to vote against would in the end decide that you know they couldn't stomach it and they would support the government. But actually it went the other way and ended up with Sir Graham Brady deciding that as chair of the 1922 committee representing all Tory backbenchers he'd better vote against it as well because he doesn't agree with it.
But just to confuse the general public even more, we then get Jeremy Corbyn immediately launching his vote of no confidence and tabling it. We'll have that vote tonight around about 7 o'clock we think, but immediately again the DUP come out and say, well, don't worry, we're going to support the Prime Minister. They didn't even give us a chance to have a little bit of tantalising, you know, suspense, for heaven's sake. I mean, the timing was awful.
Well, that's true, but I mean, it was interesting because it was straight away.
It
was immediately after the vote. The DUP is in the absolutely weird position of supporting the government as long as its most important policy fails.
Yes.
Which is not a sustainable position.
It's really
in
not.
The end.
And also, I was fascinated last night watching the reactions in Europe because you could tell that they were quite shocked as well that the scope of the defeat was as big a number as it was. But they don't seem yet, as far as I can tell, and you'll maybe be more able to watch the subtleties than me, but it doesn't look to me as though anybody in the European Union is willing to help Theresa May out here.
No, they're not. I mean, you know, they don't think they can.
Right.
Because, you know, they believe in all this stuff. They believe in Europe. They believe in the four freedoms and the indivisibility of the four freedoms. And they're going to carry on insisting that they've got, you know, the withdrawal agreement was as far as they could possibly go. They actually went further than they said they would. Mm. I mean, this is where Theresa May has sold her negotiating triumph incredibly badly, because it was a triumph. Mm. She actually got them to concede a UK-wide temporary customs union, which does split up the four freedoms. It actually allows us privileged access to the single market without free movement of labour.
No, indeed.
Now that is something she should have been trumpeting from the rooftops. Instead, she said, "This is a terrible deal. We hope we never have to use the backstop."
Yes.
But it's the best I can do. So please vote for it.
Well, it was very confusing as well when I saw one of the commissioners yesterday from Ireland talking about the backstop and how they both wanted to have it in there, even though they never wanted to use it. And for the ordinary members of the public watching this, they're kind of going, "Is this a double speak we're hearing here? Why are you putting something into an agreement agreement that you never want to use.
Exactly.
Why don't you just not bother putting it in, then everybody can get on with it, right? And then, you know, because we were told yesterday that the one thing that might happen, again, was that if she didn't get too massive of a defeat, she could go away, she could renegotiate with Brussels, get them to agree to a date, at yeah. which point the backstop would finish, i.e. 2021, something like that.
Yeah, but
and then everybody would come on board. I don't see that happening, do you?
No, but it's madness. The backstop cannot come to an end.
Mm.
We don't want it to come to an end. We want an open border in
yeah,
Ireland.
Right.
Everybody's in favour of that.
Yes.
But they're not in favour of doing the things that are required in order to achieve the objective that everybody has signed up to.
I mean, are we now in a place where we just cannot get out of? Are we literally trapped in a kind of a Dickensian cylinder of our own making from which we could never emerge? Because it would appear that there's never going to be an agreement in the House of Commons for anything. There's going to be no majority for anything. And it would appear that for those who don't want to leave the European Union, that's not a bad place to be, because we can just keep arguing about it forever.
Well, no, I think... I mean, something's got to happen in the end, and we still don't know which way it's going to go. It could go each of three ways, and that's the whole problem. It's a trilemma.
Yeah.
You know, there is no majority for any of the three options. We either leave without a deal, which is the legal default if they can't agree on anything else,
yeah.
or we have her deal, or we delay the whole thing and have a referendum.
Which is my bet for the best option for the moment. It seems as though there isn't time now, really, to get everything organised by March 29th.
Well, that's what I thought last week.
Mm.
But you can't get a referendum unless Jeremy Corbyn supports it.
Right.
And he really, really doesn't want to back a referendum.
I mean, those people in the Labour Party who want a people's vote, as they call it, I refuse to call it that. I call it the second referendum, or the third referendum.
Or the third referendum.
Or
yeah.
the loser's vote, as some people would call it. I mean, we had a very interesting caller yesterday who said, what's unfair about all of this is that Leavers apparently need to win two referendums, but the Remainers only have to win one.
Quite.
Very
good
point.
The most neutral term is another referendum.
Another referendum. I'll go with that, because we do want to be neutral at all times here at Talk Radio, as you can imagine, not least because of the regulations. But anyway, apparently all of the Labour MPs who want to have that second referendum,
another referendum,
are very sure that Labour policy in fact has that on its as part of its conference,
which proves they haven't read it.
Yes, because I mean all they've got, I mean that's it. Like saying we basically agree to do almost anything to make this work, which doesn't mean the same thing.
No, I mean, the wording of the motion that was passed at Labour Party conference says that all options have to be on the table.
Yeah.
That is not saying we're in favour of a second referendum if we can't get a general election, which is what they think it means.
Mm.
And Jeremy Corbyn is sticking...
Well, it's what they wanted to mean, isn't it?
They wanted to mean. And Jeremy Corbyn is sticking very religiously to the actual wording of the policy, which means that, you know, another referendum is going to go on being an option.
Yes.
But it's not going to be an option that he chooses.
And presumably he doesn't want another referendum on the basis that he would then have to face his voters, who would say, well, hang on, many of us voted for leaving the European Union. You're now telling us that you don't want us to be able to have that without you having yet another vote. And he's put out a tweet this morning, I think I saw just before we came on the air, in which he's kind of hinting at the fact that he's not going to be bullied by the Labour MPs, which is an interesting line to take against his own people on the day that he's asking for a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister.
Well, absolutely. But, I mean, and he's not going to be bullied by Labour Party members either, who are overwhelmingly in favour of another referendum.
Yes. Well, it's a fascinating situation. I mean, I presume today what we will have is yet another kind of day of lots of speeches being made. Well, of course, Prime Minister's questions, of course. I mean, I don't know whether he will attack her, because he's notoriously bad at Prime Minister's questions, I always think. You know, because if I was him, I'd be getting straight up at 12 o'clock and getting stuck right into her and saying, why are you even still here? But I don't imagine he'll do that.
No.
So we'll have a Prime Minister's questions as if there's nothing wrong, right? Then we'll have a period of sort of reflection, and then we'll have another debate about the vote of no confidence.
And then we'll have another vote where everybody knows the result of the vote in
advance.
I mean,
I'm assuming we will not get this horribly wrong, and somehow there will be a few Tory MPs who will vote as turkeys for Christmas, and they'll vote against her. I can't really see that, can you?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. There would have to be quite a few of them as well. I mean,
and what about this policy of his stated policy now, which is that, well, don't worry, if this one doesn't work, we'll just have another one and another one after that, and we'll just keep having them. On the basis of what exactly?
Well, I mean, that, you know, we're in a sort of parallel universe where Jeremy Corbyn is proposing constant votes of no confidence in the government, while the government is proposing constant votes on the deal until people come to their senses, in quotation marks.
Yes, indeed.
And she has to
come back now by Monday, presumably, with Plan B.
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to be?
That's going to be an anodyne motion, which is going to be amendable. So that I mean, one interesting thing that didn't happen yesterday was there wasn't a vote on an amendment for a referendum.
Right.
I mean, the Lib Dems proposed it, but the Speaker didn't.
Didn't fancy that one.
No. So at some point, you know, the House of Commons is going to vote on whether there ought to be another referendum, but it's going to defeat it, and so we will still be in this endless cycle of voting down absolutely everything that is put before the House of Commons,
right.
Except should Theresa May continue as Prime Minister of the government.
And that's the
Tory
other
government.
Final question, I suppose, to put to you, John, because I know you've probably got a very busy day ahead of you. I mean, can she continue to survive as the leader of a party where so many of her colleagues have voted against her? And I know that they voted against her for a specific reason. However,
yeah.
They still have voted against her. I mean, she commands clearly no loyalty at all.
Well, except we put that to the test last month.
Yeah.
She had a vote in her party, which she won by not a very convincing margin at all. She had 117 of her MPs voting against her, and last night she had 118 voting against her central Brexit policy.
Yeah.
So you know that is another part of the paradox of British politics is that you know people are prepared to support her as a government and as a prime minister, but they're not prepared to vote for her policy.
Mm. It's an extraordinary state of affairs. It is, as I described it earlier, the day of the living dead. It will become the night of the living dead, no doubt, when Theresa May survives yet another vote of no confidence from Jeremy Corbyn. John, thank you very much indeed for your help. John Rentall there, chief commentator for The Independent. We've got loads more to do. We'll take your calls as well, because you must now have some idea of what you want to happen next. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster.
Order!
With rapier sharp instant reaction from some of the biggest names in politics and journalism on Talk Radio.
There's gonna be a heartache tonight. A heartache tonight, I know. There's gonna be.
Welcome back to the Day of the Living Dead. This is, of course, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, live coming from Westminster College Green. It's where it's all happening. Nicola Sturgeon is currently in the main central lobby, giving her view on why she thinks there should be yet another referendum. I'm joined now by Matt Chorley from The Times, of course, a man who has probably worn himself out over the last few days, writing what can only be described as colourful anecdotes about what's been going on in what is a very bizarre and strange political atmosphere, isn't it?
It's proper crackers.
I mean, this is where satire is kind of dying, isn't it?
Yeah, all you need to do is just write down what people are saying, and that's funny enough
exactly.
on its own.
Absolutely right. Tom Brake is also here, of course. He is the Lib Dem spokesman on Brexit. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let's start with you before we go to some callers as well. What are we going to do now? I think that's the basic question everybody wants to know the answer to.
Well, I wish I had the answer. What I do have an answer to is that I don't think there's any doubt that the no confidence motion will be defeated, so there's not going to be a general election. That is pretty certain. What's also certain is that by Monday the Prime Minister has to come back with her Plan B, and then the certainty stops. I don't think anyone has any idea what her Plan B might be.
Including her.
And, of course, the initial indication that she gave literally minutes after she had gone down and been defeated by the largest margin in over 100 years was that she was going to talk to people who agreed with her deal. There are 202 of those. That doesn't actually amount to a majority, so it's not clear where we go from here.
It's not. I mean, Matt, I mean, as far as last night was concerned, it was an incredible atmosphere down here. There was people banging drums, ringing bells, two sides of the same argument, cheering something that they didn't want. I mean, it beggars belief, doesn't it, that we've managed to get to this point in what is supposed to be one of the most modern democracies in the world.
Yeah, and as the clock ticks down, what is it, 73 days
yes.
to go, 71 days
something
to go?
Something like that.
Yeah, to not only not know what we're doing, but not even know when we might know, or even if the thing we're supposed to be doing might now happen.
Yeah. And in fact, it's unlikely now to happen by the time we expect it to happen, presumably.
Well, that is the feeling that Philip Hammond overnight was on a sort of conference call with some business leaders. He, depending on who you speak to, was openly discussing floating or not knocking down the idea of extending Article 50. There's one of the many subplots, which is difficult to follow, involving some Tory MPs who don't particularly like Brexit. Their plan would delay Brexit until at least December,
yeah.
I think. But yeah, time is running out, and I think the big problem is the EU would agree probably to an extension of Article 50 if they knew what it was for.
Yes.
If last night, you know, by some miracle, Theresa May's deal had got through, but even right now the time would be tight, if she had got it through, to get all the legislation through. But if we could go to Brussels and say, look, we need another month to pass all the legislation, they're not going to give us an extension on the promise that a,
for no apparent reason,
a unicorn turns up.
What we're doing. I mean, Tom, that's true, isn't it? I mean, in terms of a second referendum or another referendum, which I know you guys would be quite keen on, I mean, you're talking about probably next year before that could be organised, aren't you?
No, I think there is a timetable that could see that referendum happening by June, but it's a very, very tight timetable. And most people have looked at how long does it take to organise a referendum, because, of course, we have to have legislation, we have to have a campaign.
And you have to kill off the last one as well, don't you?
The Electoral Commission have to look at the question that's going to be posed to make sure it's a fair one. Most assessments, it's a minimum of 22 weeks.
Yeah.
So basically puts us right slap bang, possibly on the date of the European Parliament elections. Now,
that'd be ironic, wouldn't it?
It would be ironic. I'm not sure it'd be entirely helpful either. I think the circumstances in which the EU might agree to an extension, that is one of them. The other circumstance in which the EU might agree to an extension is if the UK were to say, OK, we need more time, we need a couple of years more, but we will agree to continue as members of the European Union, no changes whatsoever, and we will have candidates in the European Parliament election. I think in those circumstances, they might agree to an extension that's not just 3 months, but longer than that.
It's an astonishing state of affairs. Let's take a couple of calls here, because a lot of you want to get on and have your say, and of course the MPs are here to talk to you as well. 0344 499 1000. James is in Brighton. James, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, very well. What do you want to say?
Well, really, I just wanted to question one of the things one of your MP guests said earlier on. He was talking about trying to engineer a moderate form of Brexit. And that's something I really sort of feel very, very strongly against. The idea that you have a vote with a binary choice and there's some form of compromise at the end of it to try and reflect the wishes of those who've lost is just absurd.
But isn't the problem that we only have a compromise? There is no such thing as something which is not going to be a compromise, it would seem.
Well, the issue I have there is that we keep talking about the parliamentary arithmetic. And essentially, the reason why we're talking about parliamentary arithmetic is because we have a majority of MPs who don't accept the democratic position that was taken. And what we have is a king. Can you imagine a scenario where we have a general election and the side losers say, well, actually, no, we're not going to leave our seats. We're going to stay where we are. We're not going to respect the results of the referendum. We're just going to carry on. And then you have people arguing, well, there's not really the parliamentary arithmetic there to actually enact the results of the general election. We're just going to try and sort of form a compromise and keep the government who was defeated in place. And that's what we have.
But that actually is what happens, though, isn't it, in a general election? If a party wins a massive, stonking majority, they can do what they want and do their full-blooded manifesto. If it's a narrow result, or as in Theresa May's case, when she lost her majority, then you have to compromise. I mean, laws only really get passed in the Commons now by compromising either with the DUP or backbench bills which have got cross-party support. So that is what happens in a general election. The result was only 52-48, and in order to reflect the views of the public and Parliament, I would have thought on a result 52-48, a compromise middle-of-the-road sort of Brexit is
well,
where
I mean,
end up.
I think as long as the compromise involves leaving the European Union. But, I mean, Tom, you can perhaps answer this better, because you don't want to leave the European Union.
No, I've been very open about that. And, of course, in the general election in 2017, I campaigned from that standpoint and was re-elected. So people are clear about what my views on this issue are. The difficulty is, and the vote yesterday confirmed that there is no single view on what Brexit is. There are 118 Tory MPs who did not agree with the Prime Minister that her interpretation of Brexit was Brexit. So when people say, get on with it, it's not clear what it is Parliament's supposed to be getting on with. And unless, I'm not sure your caller was indicating or suggesting this, unless we sort of park MPs and then, I don't know,
Well, I mean, I think what James is getting at, James, well, you can probably
explain
this, I'm sure, better for yourself.
Unfortunately, MPs do have views, and
well, they
and
do.
We express them,
well,
and we vote.
That's true. However, James, I'm sure, will tell you in a moment that, on the other hand, the Parliament did decide to hand this particular decision over to the public without any kind of doubt about what would happen,
and that's why
in the final analysis
that's why we're keen to hand it back to the public for a vote in a public's vote, people's vote, so they can see whether they're happier with the Prime Minister's deal than members of
Parliament. But how many more times, James, can they do that? What do you make of those answers you got?
I'm actually highly offended by that. We essentially have a situation here where we had Parliament decide they were going to pass over this decision to the British people. So for this issue, and this issue alone, the views of Parliament are irrelevant. I don't care what any of them think about whether we should or should not leave the European Union.
So it's a dictatorship, James, you want?
No. A dictatorship is
how do you dismiss the views of Parliament?
Because
who's going to take the decision?
Decided, no, hang on, no, stop. You decided to pass the decision over to the British people. And what you are now trying to do is you're trying to take back control from the people. That is that's autocracy. It's on the road to fascism. It's absolutely abhorrent to any person who believes in democracy.
What sort of Brexit would you like? If you were in charge and you could totally decide what Brexit was, what would you have? Would you have freedom of movement? Would you have a hard border in Northern Ireland? Would you have free trade? What's your model that works?
I would be more than happy with anything which met the most important factors for every single person who was polled about Brexit after the referendum. I would want to see our sovereignty increased, not decreased. First and foremost, that is the most important thing.
Bizarrely, that would lead back to parliamentary sovereignty in the end, wouldn't it?
Well, no, not parliamentary sovereignty. Ahead of the Brexit referendum, we heard talk about sovereignty time and time again. It is only Parliament who transformed sovereignty into parliamentary sovereignty after the referendum. As a result, try and usurp power from those they derive it from.
Yeah. Listen, James, it's a very, very complicated issue. I'm really grateful you called in, and I think you will be speaking for an awful lot of other people. Tom Brake, of course, speaks for the parliamentarians, and he thinks that he's obviously going to justify his job. Tom, thank you very much indeed for coming in and talking to us. We'll see you again very soon. No doubt this will be going on for years and years to come. This is just one of the days of the living dead. Matt Chorley and I are going to grow old together in this tent, I tell you what.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Get up-to-the-minute news flashes, instant reaction and expert analysis from some of the biggest names in Westminster.
Order!
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are live in College Green in Westminster, of course, where it is all still happening. It happened last night amidst an amazing atmosphere of drums being played, bells going off, music, singing, chanting, cheering, bizarrely from both sides of the argument. Both Brexiteers and Remainers were...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So happy that Theresa May was defeated by the biggest margin in British political history, 230 votes inside the House of Commons. Today, she's going to face a vote of no confidence from Jeremy Corbyn, which she is probably going to win. So the question now has to be asked, does anybody in Westminster know how to win anything? We're going to be joined shortly by Stuart Jackson, former Chief of Staff to David Davis, former Tory MP, of course, for Peterborough. Ross Kempson is here as well. We want to take your calls to 0344 499 1000. It's a Brexit special once again from the heart of darkness and the place where the living dead continue to stroll around. This is Talk Radio.
Get up to the minute news flashes, instant reaction and expert analysis.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
I'm joined now by Stuart Jackson, a man who knows a thing or two about Brexit negotiations. It seems to me, Stuart, and a very good morning, by the way, it seems to me that Theresa May has been accused and is still continually being accused of not really listening to anybody around her, not really allowing for any kind of reasoned debate within her own circle of Brexiteers. And she's found herself in this position, really, because of her own cussedness. Is that right?
Spot on. And in fact, she's dropped the ball even since last night, because it seems now that she was effectively pushed into saying that she was going to reach out to other people within her own party across the House of Commons. And it doesn't appear to be that is going to be the case. In fact, it's code, actually, for some people like Greg Clark and Philip Hammond for essentially keeping the UK in a customs union and trying to persuade Labour to support that policy, which is something that's going to completely backfire with the Eurosceptic part of the party. And, you know, the Labour Party are saying, well, she's not talking to us, and why hasn't she been talking and having a dialogue with us months ago? I think she does need to focus on one objective, which is to go back to Brussels, to use the chink of armour, the leverage she's got from this massive defeat, to say to Merkel in Germany, look, people in Spain, people in France, people not least in Germany are now saying we do not want a no deal. If you fix the backstop, then we're talking Turkey, we can go to the races and get a deal by the end of March. I think that's her only option.
I mean, Donald Tusk last night looked quite sort of surprised at the scale of the loss and suggested, seemingly to me anyway, without saying in as many words, well, obviously now the answer is to remain in the European Union. Similarly, the noises coming out from Juncker and others were that, you know, well, we're not going to help you out any further. You know, maybe you should reconsider your position. So, I mean, as much as Angela Merkel is saying, yes, there's still time to renegotiate the deal, she's going to have to drag them along with her, isn't she?
Well, the problem is that the Germans call the shots. Yeah. In the European Union, and the problem is that there's a huge degree of ignorance, and I say that as someone who's very pro-German. I've got friends in Germany, I go there a lot. They read The Economist, they read The Times and The Financial Times, and they think that represents Parliament and the people. You know, I went to Germany in September with David Davis, and people were saying, well, when are you going to be voting on the second referendum bill?
Yeah.
They don't understand that our system is, we take a completely different view from them in terms of parliamentary sovereignty, democracy, independence. But even they must understand that 40 billion euros worth of automotive products are exported from Bavaria, North Rhine-Westphalia. That's a big chunk when Germany now, we're told, is in a technical recession. And they can't afford a no deal. So we've just got to put dogma aside, have some pragmatism, and the whole of the House of Commons has to support Theresa May in one last effort to unlock the backstop and try and get a deal.
Ross Kempson's here with us. Ross, I mean, is it possible for the House of Commons to support Theresa May? I mean, we're hearing that she's supposed to now reach out across the divide, across the aisle, to try and get some cooperation. We heard earlier from George Freeman that there's at least 100 Labour MPs who are moderates, who are maybe willing to have conversations with less extreme Tory MPs, soft Brexiters. I mean, is there any chance of that happening? Because I don't see it.
It depends whether that's actually really what Theresa May is doing, or whether she wants to be seen to talk to other parties in the interim before bringing back her own deal, when we could be looking at a vote after we have that amendable motion on Monday, which the government needs to make its plan clear, and possibly pushing towards another vote towards the end of next week, is what sources are saying. Now, if Theresa May tries to bring her deal back to the House of Commons again, she may be able to use talks with party leaders, and this is a concern that's being expressed to me by Brexit backing MPs this morning, as a smokescreen for not really having achieved her. Very much, and for saying, well, look, I've now given the House of Commons a chance to approve my deal, I've given the House of Commons a chance to have its say, and at that point starts turning the thumbscrews on Tory backbenchers, Brexiters, saying we're now going to end up with a very soft Brexit unless you come round and row in behind my deal. So that's a fear as to what the strategy might be. Now that's guessing at what the strategy is. We don't actually know what the number 10 strategy is right now. So you might have a better inkling as to what that is.
Well, it's a bit like the Wizard of Oz. You pull the curtain back, there's not really much there. And I mean, that's a terrifying thought. But can I just correct you, Mike? I mean, you use the word extreme Tory MPs. I mean, these are Tory MPs that bizarrely are actually following through their manifesto commitment on which all but Ken Clark were elected on. I mean, we were elected, or I wasn't, sadly, but most of my former colleagues were elected on the basis of leaving the customs union, leaving the single market, and taking back control from the European Court of Justice and our borders. And that's what they're pushing for. And actually, this idea that, you know, the Brexiteers have not given ground, they've given ground on a transition period, they've given ground on £39 billion. They are willing, more or less, to suck up everything. But their red line is the backstop. And my question to the EU is, you know, we've got a mandate to carry through Brexit. You can easily alter your negotiating mandate. It's your red lines you need to be thinking about, because no one is going to put a hard border in place in Northern Ireland, and therefore pragmatism and sensible collaboration and consensus can solve this issue.
But the problem with the red lines, it seems to me, and my term extremist was not meant in an insulting way. It was only meant in a
I wasn't kind of insulted.
No, I don't mean that. I mean that it was meant in the sense that, you know, when we talk about the Tory party having, you know, one extreme and another, it's kind of that sense that I meant it in, because that's what you have here, because everybody's red lines are in different places, unfortunately. I mean, if there was one red line that you could draw down the centre of the chamber and say, all right, let's move that, that'll be fine. But unfortunately, there's about another 20 red lines next to it, which are all very, very close together and kind of come consecutively. And so, you know, getting rid of the backstop from one set of people in the Tory party is a good idea. For others, not so much. And the DUP certainly are having a massive problem with it, aren't they? So, yeah. I mean, it seems to me that we have a kind of intractable problem here without a solution, Ross.
Well, talking about intractable problems, there are two key contradictions, political contradictions right now that are characterising all of this debate. The first is that we have a Prime Minister whose government can command the confidence of the House of Commons, which we're going to see later today, but she cannot command a majority in the House of Commons for her central idea about her government, her central piece of legislation. So that's a key issue for her personally in terms of her leadership. The second key issue is that there's no clear majority in the House of Commons at the moment for any of the alternatives. Now, this morning, second referendum campaigners have been out in the Labour Party saying that there are more than 100 Labour MPs who back a second referendum, but only actually 71 have signed up to that on the letter this morning. That gets nowhere near the kind of majority that you need in the House of Commons to get the necessary legislation through, and there are all kinds of questions about whether that could now be done in the timeframes that we're talking about. Almost certainly have to extend Article 50. So in that stage, you know, if that argument falls down, there's no clear majority in the House of Commons at all for a Norway option, no clear majority in the House of Commons at all for the kind of Bowles plan that's been talked about. If there were to be any kind of sense of a majority in the House of Commons, moving towards a permanent customs union does seem to be some way that the numbers can work, but the political realities of that are extremely difficult, because the Prime Minister has repeatedly refused to offer that. It's not something that Tory backbench Brexiters are going to roll over and accept with any kind of sense of easiness at all. So there is a real gridlock still in the Commons.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Live from Westminster.
Order!
With Rapier Sharp instant reaction from some of the biggest names in politics and journalism on Talk Radio.
Stop!
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here in Westminster. We're on College Green. I don't think anyone is accusing anyone else of highway robbery last night. I think everyone expected Theresa May to lose the vote. Not quite by such a big margin, as of course she did lose the vote. However, we are now where we are, which is a phrase that's being used more and more in Westminster. I'm calling it the Day of the Living Dead, not just because Theresa May appears to be a dead woman walking, but also because Jeremy Corbyn is now pushing ahead with a vote of no confidence. He's almost certain not to succeed. So my big question to all of you out there is, does anyone in Westminster know how to win anything? Let's talk now to yet another Tory MP, former Minister George Freeman, Tory MP for Mid Norfolk. George, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Nice to see you, Mike.
Thank you very much for joining us. You know, we are in this rather ridiculous place now, are we not? Which appears to be, you know, a sort of a complete and utter jigsaw puzzle with several pieces missing, which you're never going to find. And you're going to be looking around under the carpets and behind the curtains for the rest of your lives.
I call this the deferred Christmas panto.
Yes.
We should have had this vote in December.
December, and we're in the sort of behind you moment. It was obvious that the deal was going to go down on the first vote. There's a ton of shroud waving going on. Jeremy Corbyn's posing as a Remainer in London and a Brexiteer up north. There are Tory MPs who've got a signal that they don't like it. We're just in the foothills of the manoeuvrings on this.
Yeah.
It was clear she was going to lose, and the longer it went on, it was clear the majority would get bigger. The challenge now, I think, is the mandate is getting less and less and less. When I hear hard Brexiteers saying, you know, it was very clear result, it wasn't 48-52. It was absolute mandate for hard Brexit, it wasn't. And if it was, it certainly disappeared in the last election.
Yeah.
And last night, the mandate got even smaller. The irony of last night
but there
is
still
I was
a Remainer, leaving,
right?
But there is still a mandate for leaving the European
Union.
Yeah,
I do. I absolutely think that. I was a Remainer, I was a business minister, felt very strongly that this would damage our economy, short term, maybe long term better. And it would damage my constituents' interests. I've compromised to vote for Brexit. But last night, we were hijacked by an extraordinary coalition of the hardline Brexiteers joining Jeremy Corbyn to oppose the Brexit they've asked me to vote for. And all they did last night, actually, was increase the price that Labour were going to pay for their support. If we'd lost by 20 votes, some environmental protection, some regulatory guarantees, some workers' rights, good stuff, would have probably brought Labour over. Now it's probably customs union. You couldn't make it up. The hardcore ERG last night, like sort of hostage takers, you know, kidnappers, they sort of shot the hostage. That we're now in a situation where the Labour Party are setting the running. And I'll be voting for the government today. Nobody wants a Jeremy Corbyn administration now. Nobody wants the SNP to use this as an argument.
Well, when you say nobody, you mean, of course, Jeremy Corbyn wants
I don't think
and
people
so
in the
Labour Party.
Yeah, okay. In the majority of the country, people want us to get on and sort
You don't
this
know
out.
That. You'll only one way to find out is to have a general election. My problem with the general election is that you're going to be presented with two choices which are more or less the same.
Exactly.
You know, what I'd like to see is a general election with two choices which are different.
Exactly right. Exactly.
And now,
right.
Why can't we have a party that surprisingly wants to support remaining in the European Union and a party that wants to support leaving it?
Right.
I mean, I know that sounds simple. But can't we get that?
Well, you've put your finger on something really important, that our system works on binary choices. Parties basically evolved around the binary defining choice of the 19th century and then the 20th century. And, of course, this issue isn't really
binary. It doesn't work like
that. It doesn't work like that. And so what we've got to do, I think, is sort this out in Parliament. And every MP has got to, you know, stop shroud waving and start to find a solution. Do you know, the really bigger challenge here is that public trust in politics and Parliament is at an all-time low.
It certainly is.
And if we don't
It's not going to get any better. It's actually going to reach even further lows if there's, for example, another referendum.
I agree.
If, for example, the parliamentarians cannot find a way out of this.
I completely agree, which is why, although I was a Remainer, I'm prepared to honour the referendum result. But the mandate was 48-52. It wasn't a thumping majority.
Yeah, but I mean, we lead on simple majorities here. It doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, Theresa May hasn't got a thumping majority to run the country, but she happens to be doing so with the help of the DUP. So, I mean, if you have it in that sense, then you have to take it in the other sense.
Right, but my point is I'm prepared absolutely to commit to Brexit and to try and make sure we get a withdrawal agreement. That's why I voted for the government last night. But I think the truth is, the mandate isn't conveniently in one party. It's not on one front bench. I've never known a parliament where the leaders of the debate now are really on the back benches. And I think the truth for the Prime Minister, which is a bitter pill to swallow, is that, to use a rugby metaphor, she's no longer the captain of the team. She's the ball, and we're all scrumming down, trying to push the ball over the line in the right place.
And it's not a pleasant analogy, but I'm going with it just for the moment.
Yeah,
we'll see if we can find a better one. Mark in Castleford wants to have a word. Let's find out what he wants to say. Right. Mark, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mike. And sorry, I forgot the MP's name, but
George.
Really interesting. Hi, George. Really interesting to listen to you, and I thought you were spot on with what you said. And in particular, about Jeremy Corbyn. I do not know what his position is, and yet I listened to Jim Shannon of the DUP yesterday, who said that if the deal went through, he would immediately, and the DUP would withdraw their supply and confidence to the Conservative Party. And I just thought, why didn't Jeremy Corbyn just vote for it last night, and then immediately the government falls, and then Jeremy Corbyn could have revoked Article 50 and gone into negotiations. It's open for him if he wanted to do it last night. That's
it's
the
a very
easy
good
way
point.
For him to do it.
It's a really
and
good point.
Yeah. Sorry, John.
The answer to that is, and I think you know that very well, is up north, Jeremy Corbyn in Castleford and other places that voted heavily to leave, Labour strongholds, he poses as a Brexiteer. And to be fair, he was always pro-Brexit way back. He's a Benite, hard left
Labour campaigner who felt that the European Union was a capitalist conspiracy. Do you remember all that in the 70s?
I do.
But down in London, where there's a big majority for Remain, he poses as the champion of the Islington London Remain Wing.
The Sadiq Khan Brigade.
There you go. Now, I respect both views, but you can't hold both at the same time, legitimately. And I think what Jeremy Corbyn is trying to do is try and destabilise, deepen the divisions and create chaos so that even his shambolic front bench look more organised than this mess. And in the end, I don't think he wants a second referendum. He wants Brexit to go through on Tory watch so that he inherits a post-Brexit Britain and then he'll win. So he's playing a very dangerous game. And I think a lot of Labour MPs also want Brexit to go through. They want to be the people who can say to their constituents, it only went through with my support. There's a majority in this House for a sensible Brexit.
Yeah.
And now we've got to find it.
I think one of the problems, Mark, I don't know if you agree with this, is that so many people are using this as a political game. Absolutely. I don't get the sense at all that anyone inside the Houses of Parliament is doing anything for the good of the country. They keep saying it. It's like somebody bashing you on the head with a brick and saying, I'm doing this for your own good. I'm doing this for your own good. I'm doing this for your own good. And after a while, you realise, actually, I'm not enjoying this. This is not for the good of me, it is for the good of you. And I don't know where this is all going to end, Mark. What do you think should happen?
Well, I just, apropos that point you made there, Mike, I watched a lot of MPs come on last night, and the word, and it's not the word I like to use lightly, but there are so many of them are deceitful. And George was perfectly honest there, and I wish there'd been more honesty. That probably should have gone through last night. And in fairness, I'm not a supporter of Theresa May, but that should have gone through. However, I think as to what will happen, I think Theresa May, who has handled the whole business rather badly, I think she played quite a good card last night in saying to Jeremy Corbyn, OK, let's see where exactly you stand today. We'll vote for you in all confidence. I will pass it. And now, then, where does Labour stand? Because going back to your previous point, Mike, if there was a general election, the only thing that would solve this problem is if one party was pro-Leave yeah. and one party was pro-Remain. That's the only way it would solve itself. And Jeremy Corbyn is trying to ride two horses at the same time. And until he sorts himself out, there won't be any end to this logjam.
It's a brilliantly put point, Mark. Can I just ask, do you think that the majority of people in this country want party politics to completely change and to spend the next 5 years arguing one Leave party, one Remain party? Or do you think people want us to get on, find a compromise, deliver a moderate soft Brexit that most but not all can agree with, and then get back to the real challenge of governing the country and debating the big issues, housing, drugs, local government?
Yeah, I think you've put it exactly in a nutshell, George. Most people, and I live and I'm part of a huge Leave area, part of the what they call the red leavers are now being called, and I'm in that heartland, and they are getting slightly more angry, slightly more frustrated that why hasn't it been done. And this only adds to the already diminishing amount of goodwill that there is for the political class, if there's any left. George, you're dead right what you say. It needed to be solved last night, really, and got on with it. However, George, there is just one thing I will say. Europe did know this was going to happen, and that's why they put. I cannot, as a person who is, you know, follows his politics and what have you, I cannot believe that you have got one party saying we don't want a border, another party saying we don't want a border, a third party, Europe, saying well we don't want a border, and somehow they've made that the stumbling clause of the whole damn thing, and that just appears to be politics, politicians playing politics.
Well, I
makes
totally
no
hear
sense,
you, Mark.
And also, but I mean, that also, Mark, suggests to me that there is no way we can ever find a way out of this, because if you can't even agree on that, which you all agree on, then how the hell are you going to find an agreement on stuff you don't agree on?
Well, I think there is something in the backstop that could help. You know, to be fair to the DUP, I mean, I never wanted us to be in coalition with them.
No.
And I think the minute we went into that coalition agreement, you know, we were basically laying ourselves open to perfectly fair. I mean, they can name their price. And the problem with this agreement, I do understand their problem with it. And for your listeners who, frankly, tuned out a few weeks ago, basically what the deal says is, for transition, we'll stay in the European Union while we find a negotiator subsequent agreement. If we can't find a subsequent agreement, then what will happen is that the backstop kicks in. Northern Ireland remains in the European Union. And if Great Britain, the mainland, if we decide to diverge from any regulations, the regulatory border appears in the Irish Sea. So now there are all sorts of regulatory things I'd like us to do, and the problem with that in principle is it begins to undermine the union.
And you could see Sinn Féin and the Nationalists in Ulster saying, you know, there you go, the British government have sold Northern Ireland out and using it to accelerate a united Ireland. More importantly, in a way, I think you could see Nicola Sturgeon using it as a dangerous precedent to say, well, if it's good enough for Northern Ireland, we'll have it. And then you see what I always feared, which is that Brexit would light the fuse on the unwinding of the United Kingdom, and we'll end up with a little England diminished, much reduced in our ability to influence world events, a little place with a much smaller politics, and that would be a disaster.
Indeed. Well, you haven't given us any hope whatsoever there, I'm afraid.
I'll give you some hope. I'll give you some hope now.
All right, give me some hope quickly.
So there are very sensible Labour MPs who want to deliver a moderate Brexit. I take my hat off to Ian Austin last night, John Mann, who have voted for Brexit because their constituents did, and they today will be getting serious abuse from Momentum and from the Corbynites. There is a majority in this House of cross-party MPs. There's about 100 Labour MPs who are working with me and other moderate Conservatives who want to deliver a sensible Brexit. I think joining EFTA, the European Free Trade Area, which, remember, puts us in the single market, out of the customs union, not subject to the ECJ, British court, free to do trade deals, it's pretty good. And I think we could get that through. The Prime Minister has got to change strategy, though, profoundly change strategy, from thinking of Brexit as some sort of Tory triumph, a sort of ideological victory for the Tory right, and totally switch to making this a one-nation, cross-party Brexit compromise that means we can move on and get back to the real challenge, the things I was proud we were doing in the coalition government.
And if she can do that, then maybe there is a way out, but I'm not sure she can, and maybe it has to be done with somebody else. George, thank you very much indeed. George Freeman there, MP for Norfolk, talking some sense, but not giving us any answers, really.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.